Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri
Chaitanya
Jai Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhaktavinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhaktavinda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhaktavrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhaktavrinda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhaktavrinda.
Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhaktavrinda.
Reading today from Majjhalila chapter 22, The Process of Devotional Service, text 16, and this verse is also quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. Kamadinam kachina kachita palita dhurni deshas.
Kamadinam kachina kachita palita dhurni deshas.
Tesham jatamaina karuna natrapano pashanti.
Tesham jatamaina karuna natrapano pashanti.
Utsrijyaitanatayadupatesampratam labdhabuddhis.
Utsrijyaitanatayadupatesampratam labdhabuddhis.
Tvam ayatasharanam abhayam mam nayuk svatmadasye.
Tvam ayatasharanam abhayam mam nayuk svatmadasye.
Kamadinam kachina kachita palita durni deshas.
Kamadinam kachina kachita palita durni deshas.
Tesham jatamaina karuna natrapa nupashanti.
Tesham jatamaina karuna natrapa nupashanti.
Utsrich yaitana tapyadupate sampratam labdha buddhis. Tvam ayatasharam abhayam mam nayuk svatmadasye.
Tvam ayatasharam abhayam mam nayuk svatmadasye.
Kamadinam kachita kachita palita durni deshas.
Kamadinam kachita kachita palita durni deshas.
Tesham jatamaina karuna natrapano pashanti.
Tesham jatamaina karuna natrapano pashanti.
Utsrijyaitana tayudu pate sampratam labdha buddhis. Tvam ayata sharanam abhayam mam nayuk svatmadasye. Translation. O my Lord, there is no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. Although I have rendered these desires so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. I have not been ashamed to serve them, nor have I even desired to give them up. O my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty, recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened, and now I am giving them up. Due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these desires. And now I come to you, sir, to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Purport. This verse is also quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we are saying, Hare, O energy of the Lord, O my Lord Krishna. In this way, we are simply addressing the Lord and his spiritual potency, represented as Radha Krishna, Sitaram, or Lakshmi Narayan. The devotee always prays to the Lord and his internal energy, consort, so that he may engage in their transcendental loving service. When the conditioned soul attains his real spiritual energy and fully surrenders unto the Lord's lotus feet, he tries to engage in the Lord's service. This is the real constitutional position of the living entity. Translation, repeat after me. Oh, my Lord, there's no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. Although I have rendered these desires so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. I have not been ashamed to serve them. Nor have I even desired to give them up. Oh, my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty. Recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened, and now I am giving them up. Due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these desires. And I now come to you to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Om Agana Chimananda Syakananjana Shlakaya Chakshambali Tam Yena Tasmai Shri Kurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This verse is from a chapter entitled The Process of Devotional Service. And Lord Chaitanya is teaching Rupa Goswami. In our disciplic succession, parampara, we are known as Rupa Nugas, those who are following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. Because Rupa Goswami was personally instructed by Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya gave him the seeds of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Rupa Goswami expanded upon those seeds by culling through all the Vedic literatures and bringing out verses that showed the supremacy of bhakti, devotional service to the Lord. And also Rupa Goswami explained the loving flavors between Krishna and the devotee in love of God. Now, we can meditate on this verse immensely. It's a very powerful verse because it presents the oppressiveness of the material condition. And at the same time, it's a direct personal plea for shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. So you get both things going on at once. You get to feel the stark reality of material life, and you get to feel the personal shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. In other words, you get the flavors of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're not interested simply in negating the material world or abhorring the material world. We want to recognize the illusory energy of Maya for what it is, while taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. In this way, we do both things at once. We try to understand the reality of material existence, and at the same time, we hold on tighter to the lotus feet of the Lord and immerse ourselves in the nectarian ocean of transcendental loving service. Lord Chaitanya has explained to Rupa Goswami that there are two types of jivas, two types of part and parcel, expansions of the Supreme Lord. There's Nitya Mukta and Nitya Bhada. The Nitya Mukta are eternally liberated. The Nitya Bhada, as you know, they're eternally conditioned. Why eternally conditioned? Because it's gone on for so long, you can't find the beginning. Therefore, it's said eternally conditioned. Those who are eternally liberated, they've never forgotten Krishna. Conditioned life means forgetfulness. It's amazing how people think that they're in full perception of their life and their surroundings, when actually they are swimming in a pool of forgetfulness. What happens every night when you go to sleep? Going to sleep means forgetting time. You can practice at night as you're about to take rest. Okay? Instead of saying, now it's time to take rest or go to sleep, you can say, now it's time to forget. You forget everything when you sleep. But you don't mind. You're laying your head on the pillow and you're going to forget your identity. You're going to forget your relation to the world. You're going to forget everything in exchange for a peaceful sleep, right? And you put your head on the pillow to forget. And you feel quite confident you're going to wake up again. Let's just see how extraordinary this is. There's no reason why you have to wake up and remember who you are, but still, you lay your head on the pillow with a pretty good feeling that you're going to wake up in the morning. So, going to sleep means forgetting, waking up means remembering. Now, this gives you insight into what it means to die. Die means forgetting. You go to sleep, meaning you leave this present body, and then you wake up, meaning you take another body. So why should there be fear of death? Do you fear going to sleep at night? Does anyone here fear going to sleep at night? Oh no, I'm going to lay my head on this pillow, and I'm going to not remember who I am for 6 or 7 hours. I won't know where I'll be. I don't know what will become of me for 6 or 7 hours. Does anyone here have paranoia about that? But when you think of death, then you become afraid. More than the pain, it's like, what's going to come next? But you should practice when you go to sleep at night. What's going to come next? Oh no. Will I wake up in the morning? What will happen while I'm deep in sleep? But because the body feels fatigue and also the mind wants relief, you willingly go to sleep. Ah, yes. Of course, in material life, most people have to take some kind of substance to help them sleep, a nightcap. Some drink, smoke some marijuana, take some barbiturates, because their mind is so anxiety stricken, they can't sleep properly. If you look at life as an ocean of forgetfulness, you begin to see things in a different way. Rather than perceiving that this is the information age and everyone's alive with so much information, look at it the other way. This is forgetfulness. Forgetting your identity, forgetting your relationship with Krishna, forgetting everything except your temporary material desires. And those even at night you forget, although while you're sleeping they come out as dreams, but basically you've forgotten everything when you put your head on the pillow. Then in the morning, you wake up and you remember, oh, I am this body, I am this mind, I have so many material desires. You see what's going on? Now, those who are Nitya Mukta, eternally liberated, they're always awake to Krishna's service. That is the exalted situation in life which we are embarking upon, even from within this material world, from within material existence, to be always awake to Krishna's service, to be ever stimulated by service opportunities to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. That is reality. Then you're wide awake. In material existence, even when you're so-called wide awake, you're still basically asleep because you have no consciousness of Krishna. Just think about it the next time you reach that part of the day when you're feeling wide awake. Still you're dreaming. Still you're sleeping. Those who are eternally liberated souls, the Nitya Mukta, they're always increasing their absorption in Krishna's service. Or what about the opposite? The eternally conditioned Nitya Buddhas. They are averse to devotional service. They're always turning away from service. You can see that in your practical devotional life. We're happiest in Krishna consciousness when we're awake and attuned to devotional service. And we're miserable in Krishna consciousness when we start to turn away from devotional service. And turning away from devotional service doesn't mean you enter some neutral area. No. Turning away from devotional service means turning to Maya. The essence of the Nitya Buddha, the eternally conditioned soul, is that the Nitya Buddha is opposed to devotional service. Now, this may sound very strong and harsh. Well, it's not that I'm an atheist. It's not that I don't believe in God. That has not much to do with it. The whole point is, how are your senses engaged? Are you engaged in devotional service or not? What is the use in religiosity or metaphysical speculation or mystic yoga when you are opposed to devotional service? Opposed to devotional service means not engaged in devotional service. Therefore, you have to be engaged in the service of illusory energy. There's no neutral ground. So this is the psychology of the conditioned soul. Averse to service, turning away from service, opposed to service, yet willing to talk all about religion, you know, metaphysical knowledge, mystic yoga, psychic powers, raising the kundalini, understanding, you know, the cosmos, everything. Understanding male-female relationships. Understanding everything except devotional service. That is the nature of the eternally conditioned soul. You have this psychological aversion to devotional service, and it comes out in so many rationalizations. I can't. I want to, but it's just not possible. Not now. In the future. I have many responsibilities. After all, this is the practical world we live in. So much thought like that, which actually boils down to being averse to devotional service, or put more starkly, opposed to devotional service. If you say to someone, though, are you opposed to devotional service? Most will say, oh, no, I mean, you know, I appreciate all paths. Everyone should be spiritual in their own way. Or you come up with some personal excuse for yourself that, well, everything has its proper measure. And in any case, Lord Chaitanya is giving us easy insight into the psychologies of those who are pure and those who are conditioned. Because of contact with the illusory energy, what happens? You get a belief in material happiness. You should also ask yourself that question. Why do I believe in material happiness? It's a belief. It's a religion. Why do you think it exists? People say, does God exist? How do we know God exists? Well, first try to understand, does material happiness exist? No one asked that question, though. Well, we want to know, if God exists, there's no God, why can't we see Him? If there's a God, why can't we see Him? But why don't you ask yourself, first, does material happiness exist? Try to see that. Due to contact with the illusory energy, you get this false belief in material happiness generated in your mind. And so then you look out at the world thinking there is such a thing. Where is it? I know it's here. I believe in it. Material happiness. Yeah, I see some over there. I see some material happiness. Yeah, I knew it existed. See, I told you. Come along with me. Hold my hand. Together. We shall achieve it. It's there, you see? Do you see? Oh yeah, I see it too. And you gather all your friends and family. Everyone, look, there it is. Oh yeah, we also see it. Mass hallucination. That's what people call a society. Mass hallucination. You could also say mass consensual trance. It's like the young have their trance dancing. Is that still popular, trance dancing? Is that out of style now? Who used to be a trance dancer? Kadirva used to be a trance dancer. What is it again? Trance dancing? How do you...
You just dance however you want.
And just go... You dance however you like to lots of electronic music. To techno?
I don't even know what it's called.
And then you just go on and on all night? And you're... Your energy is fueled by various hallucinatory substances.
Yeah, much more now.
So that's a good title of a seminar, public seminar, trance dancing in the material world. We have any men trance dancers here? Ex trance dancers? Yes. How would you describe it? Since you're more up to date, you're more current than Kadirva.
Well, there's kind of different dance moves that come in and out of fashion, you know? Because people see a new move and then they copy it and then they like it. And then that kind of, you know, fades away and then a new kind of move comes in. So it's kind of like the dance music. There's always a new style coming in.
Why do they call it trance dancing?
Just because the music, it's called
trance music. Trance music, I see.
Yeah, and then there's techno music.
I see. Okay. So, living a material life means you're in a trance. You've got this burning vision, you see. Material happiness. The hallucination is produced simply by contact with the material energy. As soon as you contact the material energy, you must hallucinate because you are not God. You are a tiny part of God. Therefore, you become overpowered by the illusory energy. Krishna, however, has no problem with his illusory energy. It belongs to him. In fact, for Krishna, all his energies are spiritual. Vishnu Shakti Prana Pukta, the Vishnu Prana says. For the Lord, everything is His Vishnu Shakti, acting in different ways. But for the tiny souls who come under the influence of one of those Vishnu Shaktis, they see the energy as separate from the Lord. That's due to their faulty vision. And therefore the energy acts on them in a certain way. Now, in today's verse, we get a very poetic, very graphic, beautiful description of what it's like to both forget and remember Krishna. Kamadinam katina katita palita durnideshas. The masters. Who are the true masters of material existence? Lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion. These are the rulers. Now, you might think, okay, these are my rulers, but they're not so bad. It's not so bad to collaborate with the enemy. You do get some benefits. Just like when the Nazis invaded France, many French persons collaborated. Okay, we give up our national sovereignty, but you know, we get some special treatment, some special food, you know, this, that, and the other. Might as well realize, you know, this is going to go on forever. You know, the Nazis are going to be here forever, and so we want to go on with our life and enjoy it, so we'll collaborate. Then what happens? 4 years later or so, 5 years later, the Nazis are gone, and then the collaborators are persecuted. Whereas when the Nazis were there in France, the underground, the resistance was persecuted. And 5 years later, it all switches. The collaborators thought they were enjoying, now they get persecuted. They were paraded through the streets of France once the Nazis were driven out, and people, you know, they were hanged. Many of them didn't even make it to trial. This is the up and down nature of material existence. So what do we get by collaborating with the material energy? By serving such taskmasters. Lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion. Those of you who've had jobs, you know what it's like to have a boss. You have to produce to meet the boss's expectations. What about your boss's lust, anger, greed, and so on? Think about how you have to fulfill their expectations. They carry a whip, they're taskmasters. Now you shall be lusty. Now be greedy. Now be envious. This is what goes on in life. And then what is your response? Oh, this is me. This is my natural self. I should express myself in this way. I shouldn't repress myself. All you're doing is submitting to a taskmaster. But you think, this is my natural self. So, you have these masters, and what about them? There's no limit to their orders. You can't count the number of orders these masters are going to give to you, nor can you count the ways that these masters are going to push you around. Generally, you think, just like when you're working, you work a fixed schedule per week. It's like Bridget, you work how many hours? A week.
40.
So suppose you had to work a job in which you had no idea when the work schedule ended. Suppose your boss at the optometrist's place said, Bridget, just come to work today and we'll see when you leave. Day after day it was like that. Just come to work, serve the masters, And we'll see, you know, if there's time for a break or time to leave. He said, forget it. This is a horrible job. I'm not taking any job like that. I want to know when the break comes and when I can go home. Yeah. No. We don't know when the job ends, but it's your duty to stay until the job ends. Who would work under those conditions? Would you, Jeff? Isn't it so that people work thinking there's a limit? There'll be a time when it stops. But when you serve the unwanted masters, lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion, you don't know when the end of the orders will be, because the end doesn't come. People like to talk about endless love, but the real situation in material life is endless labor serving your senses. Now, this is a very important point, because in your mind, what do you imagine when you indulge in your material desires? You imagine, okay, I'll just do this and then there'll be peace, right? I'll just act in this way and then the desires will subside and things will be all right. No, it doesn't work like that. That's why this verse is very scientific. Although it's so poetic, it's also very scientific. What does Rupa Goswami say? Although I have rendered these desires so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. No vacation. No break. In our minds, we see it another way, though. In our conditioned mind, we see, I'll serve my senses, and then that'll be it. I'll take a break for a while. I'll submit to my material desires, and then they'll leave me alone. Right? It looks quite obvious. You serve your material desires, get them off your case, get them off your back, and then they leave you alone. Right? So it's such a simple truth. What could be the problem? Material desires are bugging you, just serve them, and they'll go away. Right? This is natural life, right? Does it work out that way? No. That's why Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Dusparinanalenaja, the lust burns like fire and is never fulfilled, never satisfied. You just get the illusion of satisfaction that do this and then you'll be satisfied. That's why the material energy is called Maya, that which is not. You're looking for satisfaction and relief? You don't get it, although it looks like you will. It's a very hard point for someone to understand that what you're looking at is an illusion. You're not going to get what you want. That's why Krishna plainly says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi esha gunamai mama mayadraya mameva ye prapajyante mayam etam tadantite. Krishna explains to you honestly. He's not hiding things. He says, this material energy of mine is so difficult to overcome. But if you surrender to me, you can cross over. Otherwise, no. But we're determined to show that it is possible to overcome the material energy separate from Krishna. That's the story of our life. And in this way, we simply increase the pages of history. That's about it. With futile attempts. Feel in your heart how the material energy empowers you. Yes, you'll be okay. Yes, you'll fulfill yourself. Yes, you'll cross over all problems. You feel that? That confidence? Yes. That kind of heady feeling, you know. You project yourself forward. You assert yourself. Yes. And people in material existence, they like to see that. Oh, you got savvy for life. You're a go-getter. You're ready to swim with the sharks. There. Career books written for people who want to enter the business world. And one's called How to Swim with the Sharks. Did you read that one, Bruce? How to be, you know, aggressive and carnivorous in terms of fighting your way through this world, hacking your way through other people to get what you want. So you have this feeling in you that it's out there. I'm getting it. Chandidas was telling me how he was applying for his PhD studies in England, and even though his grades from his undergraduate studies, whatever, they were very high. But then the interviewer, the lady professor, looked at him and said, "You're just too peaceful. I just don't think you've got what it takes. You just don't have that attitude, you know? There's something missing in you. You're just too peaceful, too placid. I'm sorry. I mean, you've got high grades, but I just don't know if you've got what it takes to..." Yeah. So he got her recommendations from his previous professors who all said he was an ideal student. And then she said, "Oh, okay. Otherwise, based on her own sense perception, she thought, "This guy, you know, he may have high grades, but he's just lacking something crucial for life." So I hope by these examples that you can see, get some insight into what's going on in material existence. Because Rupa Goswami says, "Recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened. Due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of those desires." This is the revolution. I refuse to obey them. Why? Just out of abhorrence of the material world? Just out of negativity? More important than that is out of attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. So, we'll back up a bit. Now remember, I've rendered these desires so much service, they don't show any mercy to me. Isn't that your natural expectation, that when you serve someone, you get some kind of mercy, some kind of benefit? You expect that if you serve your employer nicely, you'll get a raise, you get a promotion, or we won't bug you so much or something, right? But who wants to work for an employer who's just constantly down on you and disappointing you and never gives you a break? In some parts of the world, just like, I don't know if it still goes on in the former Soviet Union, in Russia, but a few years ago, when their economy was going through a very bad spell, people would go to work and not know if they're going to be paid or not. Now you think, who could do that? Who could go to work not knowing whether you're going to get paid or not? I just wouldn't go. But why did they still go? Who knows?
Yes, because if you didn't go, there's no possibility of getting paid.
Right, they was holding on to a hope. You know, we don't know if we're going to get paid, but somehow or other, you know, we can't go to work because we might, it might be true that we'll get paid in the future, and what else are we going to do? And if we just walk away, we've got nothing, no hopes. But can you imagine that? Going to work and not knowing whether you're going to get paid or not? Who could do that here? Who would do it for even a day? You'd just be outraged. The Kiwis would be outraged. This is nonsense. But in other parts of the world, they do that. They just, that's life, you know. I mean, you got to work, you need money. I mean, you just have to have hope that one day the pay is coming through. And often, because they can't pay the persons, what do? They say, oh, just take some of the stock and go out and sell it. It's like if Bridget couldn't be paid for her job in Levin. And so the boss just said, look, you know, we don't have the cash to pay you. Here, take some eyeglasses, go out the street and hawk them. That's what happens in some countries. So you see, and you drive down the main road of the city and you see people out there with, if they work in a car tire factory, they've got like 10 car tires trying to hawk the eyeglasses. You got 10 sets of eyeglasses. Whatever. That's the only way their factories can pay them. Why is it any different in serving our material desires? They don't show any mercy. No relief. And as I said, the biggest illusion is you think if I serve these pushings, then they'll leave me alone. Never happens. It's just a dream. The more you serve these bad masters, the more they demand of you. That you don't see. And why don't you see it? Because Maya is hiding that reality from you. Maya just holds out the sugar to you. It's going to be so sweet. But you don't see the club in the other hand. It's going to knock you in the head. You want to nibble at the sugar, but you don't see the club. Why does that false presentation afflict your mind? That's the nature of being in contact with the material energy. Once again, remember, your heart, your mind fills up with these false hopes. Yes, I see it. It's there. And then you invite others. Look, look, do you see it? Oh yes, we see it also. Then you have family and friends and a whole society of persons who see it. Yes, it's there. And anybody who doesn't see it, you get angry with. What's wrong with you? You don't see it. Your family and friends may get angry at you then. But everybody knows it's there. Follow your dream, however you feel best, but just follow your dream. What else does Rupa Goswami say? He goes further. This verse is very packed with meaning. I've rendered these desires so much service. They've not shown any mercy to me. They've given me no vacation, no break. Still, I'm not ashamed to serve them. This is embarrassing. I'm not ashamed. Can you imagine boasting to someone? I'm going to work. There's not going to be any pay. I don't know when, you know, the working day ends, but I'm going to work. Can you imagine boasting to someone like that? It's going to be good. I'm working and not getting paid and not knowing ever when I'm going to have a vacation. No shame. Of course, when you're in illusion, you actually don't see that you're going to be thwarted. So therefore, you have this lack of shame. You throw yourself away quite easily. Not only do you have no shame, but Rupa Goswami says, nor have I even desired to give up these desires. It's false desires. That's what you see every day as a preaching reality. People have no desire to give up their delusions. They get defensive. What do you mean? I'm okay. It's not that bad. I'm spiritual in my own way. What are you talking about? Everyone's, you know, a good person, basically. Everyone's, you know, fulfilling themselves. What's the problem? People get very defensive. They're very busy doing everything else except what is important for them. So no shame and no desire to give up such horrible employment. Now Rupa Goswami makes his personal appeal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. O my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty, Yadupati. When you talk about Krishna, you always must talk about Krishna's associates, because Krishna is never alone. Because the Lord is the supreme enjoyer, he always has unlimited associates, because enjoyment means in the association of others. Who here wants to be alone all their life? Alone meaning no one around, ever. Anyone want to be like that? No, you want to be around like-minded persons or sympathetic persons, or even if the persons are different, still their company is enjoyable because they're like a counterpoint to you, they're like a contrast to you. You want stimulation by the presence of others. That's why in Bhakti Yoga, association with devotees is so important. You don't want to be alone. I say, Sri Yashoda, spend your whole life alone. Don't talk to anyone. Could you do it? Could you do it? Alone? Never anyone around? So why do you want that of God? The Lord should just be satisfied creating and destroying and punishing. No, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. His name is Bhuri Bhoja, one who has unlimited enjoyment. That means he has unlimited associates. And he's able to love his unlimited associates in unlimitedly different ways. Therefore, the Lord has so many forms and incarnations to attract so many different types of devotees. Of course, in our sampradaya, our guru parampara, we are focusing mainly on Sisi Radha Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahayanya. Lord Chaitanya is Radha Krishna combined. But there are other forms of the Lord. Even in Chaitanya Leela, some devotees were attracted to Ram, not Krishna. Murari Gupta was like that. Lord Chaitanya told him, Krishna is the essence of all sweetness, the ultimate in sweetness. You should worship Krishna. Murari Gupta took that order seriously. But then the next morning he came back in complete distress. What is the use of me? I tried to follow your order. I couldn't. I've sold my head to the lotus feet of Ram. I cannot withdraw it. Lord Chaitanya told him, this is real devotion, that you can't give up your master even when asked to. Krishna knows how to reciprocate individually with each devotee. That's something that you'll find out as you advance in Bhakti Yoga. You'll get that confidence that Krishna knows how to relate to your heart. That is God. Not simply brilliance in creation, but also brilliance in loving affairs. And even as a neophyte devotee, you can begin to notice that brilliance of the Lord in establishing loving affairs with his devotee. Yadupati, the master of the Yadu dynasty. The Yadu dynasty in this world, when Krishna was present, some were eternal associates of the Lord. Others were demigods who came to join the Lord's pastimes. The Yadu dynasty was so powerful that when Krishna disappeared from the ordinary vision in this world, he had to devise a ruse to get the Yadu dynasty out of the world too. Because Krishna was thinking, number one, the Yadus will never be able to tolerate separation from me. And they're so powerful, they might trample the whole earth into oblivion, just feeling separation from me. And secondly, it could be that some of them are getting a bit proud, thinking they're my associates and they can do whatever they like. So for that reason also, I should pull them out of the world. And thirdly, if people see that even the most powerful dynasty, the Yadus, who live with such opulence and sovereignty, if even they apparently undergo distress and leave this world, then people will understand this world is not our home. But if the Yadu dynasty stays, it will increase the prestige of the material world, and Krishna didn't want that. If the Yadu dynasty stayed, if Krishna's personal associates stayed in this world, people would think, this material world's not a bad place. The Yadus are here. We're here. We'll just go on and on. So Krishna wanted to show a vivid lesson that this world is not your home. So he withdrew the Yadu dynasty in a most dramatic way. He had them annihilate each other. Just to show you, don't stick around here. That annihilation of the Yadu dynasty is Krishna's mercy. It's a ruse. There's no question of the Yadus being destroyed. But Krishna just came up with this immensely dramatic way of withdrawing them from the world to teach a lesson. How else could he get the Yadus out of the world? No one could defeat them. So when you refer to the Lord as Yadupati, you're referring to his associates. Of the Yadu dynasty, not many knew that Krishna is the cause of all causes. Some thought he's the super soul. Arjuna, Yudhisthira, like that, they knew Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As for ordinary persons, even though Krishna was in this world, ordinary people did not recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? You can only understand Krishna through devotional service. He can even be present in this material world to your vision, and you can't understand him. So many people think, if God was here, then I would understand. No! Only through devotional service can you understand. Actually, Krishna is here with us now, as his holy name, as the Shastra. He's here as Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. He's here. No one doubts Krishna's presence when they take prasad, right? Everyone knows through their tongue that this is something special. Now Rupa Goswami is making a direct personal appeal to Yadupati. Not some vague belief in God, some vague belief in a supreme controller. No, he knows the specifics. This is hard for people to understand. They just think because of their limited knowledge, God is God. Yeah, I believe in God. You know the whatever. And I think that's sufficient. What they will not accept in dealing with another person they'll accept in dealing with Krishna. When it comes to knowing another person, you want to know all the details, all the nuances, everything about that person, the way that person does everything. But when it comes to the Supreme Absolute Truth, just God, the all-pervading, the ultimate, the almighty, and no thirst for the specific details of the Lord's personal existence. That is the great calamity. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, in his Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wrote that, "Impersonal calamity thou hast moved." There's a huge difference in accepting that there's God and understanding Yadupati. So in bhakti yoga, we're just always thirsty for all the personal details about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Yadupati, the lord of the Yadu dynasty, who had his headquarters in Dwarka. And of course, as Vrajendranandana, the son of the king of Vraja. Vrajajanaranjana, the central attraction of Vrindavan. Yashoda Nandana, the darling son of Mother Yashoda. We love all those details about Krishna. We want to know who his associates are, how Krishna does things. So amidst this most powerful prayer describing the workings of illusory energy, Rupa Goswami is presenting this plea for taking shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. My transcendental intelligence is awakening. How does transcendental intelligence awaken? By following Krishna's instructions, your insanity starts to subside. After wandering through so many births and deaths on different planets in different bodily forms, sometimes when you see some creature, whether it's a mouse or a dog or a cat, whatever, do you sometimes think, that could be me? Any of you think that? What would it be like if that was my body? It is some living entity's body. There's a part and parcel of Krishna in that body. So why don't you think, why not me? Crawling around like that. That is Pandita Samadarshana. Seeing the actual reality, spirit, soul, and every body, and therefore all living entities are equal as parts of Krishna. It could be you in that body. Why aren't you in that body? And what is your plan so you don't have to take that kind of body? Transcendental intelligence awakens when you contact a devotee of Lord Krishna. The devotee is known as Sadhu Vaidya, the devotee physician. The devotee can heal because he chants the hymns, Lord Chaitanya says, that make the external energy flee, that make the witch of Maya flee. Every devotee has that ability to chant hymns, to give the medicine as the sadhu vaidya, to make the illusion of Maya disappear. So when you contact a devotee, then you awaken your transcendental intelligence. our devotees should learn to study Srila Prabhupada's books in such a way as to guard their intelligence and increase their intelligence even more. Guard their spiritual intelligence, their divyagyan, and increase it. You see, I found over the years, as any devotee will find out, it is a career, a whole career in itself, to stay out of Maya. It's actually a profession, it's a job, to stay out of Maya. And of course, the job is accomplished by becoming attached to Krishna. So it's a very serious occupational duty. It's the topmost occupation. How to remain absorbed in Krishna's service and how to understand the illusions of Maya. This is a profession. It's an occupation. It's not something you do in your part-time. Although you'll get benefit doing it in your part-time. Any little bit you do of Krishna consciousness, there's benefit. But if you're actually serious about obtaining Yadupati, then you take up a full-time occupation. Full-time occupation doesn't mean you have to live as a monk or brahmachari or brahmachari. That doesn't mean full-time occupation. Full-time occupation means whether you live in your own home and you're working or you live in an ashram, you're number one priority in life is how to become attached to Krishna and detached from Maya. You're constantly trying to understand how to become more dear to Krishna and how to escape the clutches of illusory energy. You take shelter of these books Srila Prabhupada has worked so hard to give us. And try to understand, what is my situation? Why do I think such nutty things? You ever ask yourself that question? I can't believe the stuff that's in my mind. Why do I think like that? You have to confront yourself like that. Why do I have these delusions? What is it? Reminds me of, there's some Christmas poem about Santa Claus coming or, I just remember one line, visions of sugar plums dance in their heads. It's about, the kids when they go to sleep the night before Christmas. You know that poem? Everyone? Yes. Yes. the kids are going to sleep in anticipation, that Santa Claus is coming. As they go to sleep, dreaming, I'm going to wake up and get all the prezzies. Visions of sugar plums dance in their heads. Why do I have these crazy things in my mind? Why? You've got to have that kind of motivation. Not just, my mind, this is the way it is, and whatever. It's not you, and you have to have a proactive attitude about it. How does Maya try to wear you down? How many years do you think you're going to be able to go on like this? Discriminating, analyzing, being on your guard. How many years? Come on. You know you. When are you going to relax and have a good time? Do you really think you can keep up the pace of always understanding this is Maya? This is not Maya. This is just bogus propaganda. A devotee is not just day after day absorbed in, this is false, that is false. No, a devotee is tasting the nectar at the lotus feet of the Lord. Maya is not going to tell you that there's nectar in devotional service. So what's the propaganda that's broadcast to your mind? It's going to be year after year like this. A lifetime of restraining yourself. A lifetime of controlling your senses and no pleasure. Do you really think you can do it? How many years can you hold out? No wild flings. No burning passion.
no comfortable blanket of ignorance. This is a false attack, because the reality is not being presented. It's not Maya's job to present you reality. That besides controlling your senses and struggling that way, there's also the taste of Krishna's lotus feet. You expect Maya to tell you that? Now, here's the illusion. And just understand that besides fighting the illusion, there's also the nectar of devotion. You expect Maya to treat you like that? No. The job of the illusory energy is to cover you. So therefore, devotional service is just presented to you as, you know, repressing yourself, you know, trying to control your senses, biting your tongue. Being harassed by material desires and no relief year after year until you snap. And then what else does the illusory energy tell you? Think about it. So many others have snapped. When are you going to snap? Do you ever hear broadcast into your mind by Maya the glories of devotional service? No, never. Does that make you realize what's going on? It's all a scam. But you expect the illusory energy to be impartial and make a full presentation. Yes, I know, you know, I'm making you illusory propositions. There's also Krishna too. Now you choose. That is not the way Maya works. You're not going to get the full picture. You're simply going to be harassed to serve your senses. Therefore, a devotee arranges his or her schedule so you're always listening to Krishna. Then you get the full story. Always thinking of Krishna, hearing about Krishna, making plans to serve Krishna, associating with Krishna's devotees, and associating with Krishna's devotees means hearing about Krishna, thinking about Krishna, planning to serve Krishna. Then you get the full picture. I'm sure so many of you have had the experience of your mind is harassing you. And the material energy is like a jackhammer inside your brain. Come on, come on. And all you do, you pick up a Krishna book, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and start reading. And in a half hour, the whole illusion goes away. I'm sure you've had that experience. What seems so all-powerful and impossible to resist fades away at the sound of the holy name, at the presence of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, just fades away. Then you understand what's going on. What does Lord Chaitanya also explain to Rupa Goswami? Krishna, Surya, Soma, Maya, Hoya, Andhakar. Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like darkness. When the sun is there, there can be no darkness, no shadows. Not even reflections, just the sun shining directly. So our job is how to always have the Krishna sun rise in our life. Then there's no Maya, no darkness, no reflections, no shadows, just direct sunlight. It sounds so simple, doesn't it? Hear about Krishna, talk about Krishna, think about Krishna, chant Krishna's name. But Rupa Goswami finishes by saying, due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these desires. And I now come to you
to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. This is a plea for establishing personal relationship with the Lord and acting in that relationship so that you get the fruit, love of Krishna. Not simply get me out of material existence. No. Give me your lotus feet. Engage me in your personal service. Establish me in my original relationship with you, my Lord. Once you are situated at Krishna's lotus feet, then what is the fear? Once we take shelter properly of Krishna's lotus feet, which are the boat by which you can cross over material existence, what is the fear then? You won't even be afraid of death. Just like, it's true for a devotee, when you go to sleep at night, you're not fearful because you know you're going to wake up in devotional service. You're going to wake up, your japa beads will be there, Srimad Bhagavatam will be there, the devotees will be there. So, death is the same way for a devotee. You're going to go to sleep and wake up, and Krishna will be there. Devotional service will be there. Same thing. A bit of change of location, that's all. Change of temples. That's what death is for a devotee. Just change of service location. Naturally, you feel, I'm going to miss the devotees, and the devotees will miss that person. Although on the spiritual platform, there's a connection. Still, a devotee is simply dying to engage in Krishna's service. Just like you go to sleep at night in order to wake up and engage freshly in Krishna's service. Otherwise, we don't want to sleep. If we had a choice, if a devotee has a choice, the devotee doesn't want to sleep. I'd rather sleeping, you know, you spend 6 or 7 hours a night lost. But in order to maintain these bodies, we take the rest we need. Because as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you can't be a yogi if you sleep too much or sleep too little, eat too much or eat too little. So we have to see what we need in order to engage properly in Krishna's service. Just like when I was spending more time in the country here, and I used to drive myself here and there in a car, I realized I had to take a little more rest than I expected because I had to drive. It just takes one experience of you starting to nod while you're driving to make you realize that you've got to be careful. You have to take the rest you need to properly execute your devotional service. You might feel like you want to sleep less, but it has to be able to work out practically. So a devotee goes to sleep in order to serve Krishna. Wake up energized. Similarly, a devotee dies in order to serve Krishna. Either go to the spiritual world, or if Krishna wants you to continue serving him in the material world, you get a new body. And you start again. So therefore, a devotee is not afraid of death. The devotee is simply afraid of forgetting Krishna. If you forget Krishna, yet you live in the most opulent circumstances, it's hellish. Doesn't matter where you live, what your situation is. please think about these points. Serving the unwanted orders of unwanted masters, and awakening transcendental intelligence, taking shelter of Yadupati, the lord of the Yadu dynasty. I come to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. Devotional service is true salvation. That is stated by Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto of Bhagavatam. Mukti hitta hitta rupam swarupena vivastati. Mukti hitva makam rupam swarupena vivastati. Liberation, salvation, actually means being reestablished in your original form, your constitutional nature, and serving Krishna. So when you say, Krishna, save me! Sometimes you say that. Oh, Krishna, save me! Right? Something happens during the day. Yes? You say that? What are you really saying? You're saying, Krishna, engage me in devotional service. There's no salvation without devotional service. Engage me in your personal service. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Take me through the stages of sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. Understanding my relationship with the Lord. Acting in that relationship and tasting the fruit, prayojana, love of God, the ultimate goal of life. All right, any questions?
In devotional service, we have to plan our day so that we're always fully engaged. But at the same time, how do we adjust to the fact that Krishna may have planned our day differently? How do we do
that? You're always ready for that. Isn't that how you serve someone you care for? You have a plan how to please that person, but you're always ready to see maybe the person wants something else? Isn't that personalism? Still, it's nice that, especially in the beginning stages of devotional service, you have a predictable schedule every day. A chance to be regulated is a great benefit for becoming established in Krishna consciousness. Even as you mature in devotional service, it's a regulation is always a great benediction. Srila Prabhupada always did the same thing at the same time, no matter where he was. Even while traveling around the world, and you have to travel a bit to know how amazing that is. He was very regulated. When you keep your life regulated, that means you're going to live simply. It's always a struggle to live simply in this world because there's so many complications always raining down on us. But if you endeavor to live a regulated life, your life will be simple. Anything else?
How do you know if you're eternally conditioned or eternally bereft?
Did you have some doubt? Did you have some doubt?
Sometimes
you thought that you were eternally liberated?
Sometimes I thought about pain, but it's only finishing. How you describe it. I mean, I'm here, so it's alright.
Yes, the eternally conditioned, by following the instructions of the Sadhu Vaidya, the devotee physician, can revive his or her Krishna consciousness and become unconditioned. You see, once you are Krishna conscious properly, then there's no question anymore of being eternally conditioned. Once you enter into the ocean of Krishna consciousness, whether you were coming from the ranks of the conditioned souls or not, it doesn't matter. Just like so many rivers pour into the Pacific Ocean, you don't go into the middle of the Pacific Ocean and say, this is from this river, this water is from that river. Once it's in the ocean, it's the ocean. Sometimes eternally liberated souls come to this world upon the order of Krishna simply for the purpose of distributing Krishna consciousness. And they may seemingly act as part of society until their mission becomes manifest, or that they're here simply to spread Krishna consciousness. Sometimes when Srila Prabhupada was speaking confidentially, he would say, you know, I have never forgotten Krishna. Once he explained, I believe this was when he was denied, he was quarantined or something, trying to enter a country, because a devotee had forgotten his yellow fever certificate, shot vaccine certificate or something, so they kept him in quarantine for 2 days or so. So Srila Prabhupada began to speak about how, just confidentially, he just started saying, I didn't want to come to this world. And the devotees around him, his disciples, were kind of, I never wanted to come here. But Krishna told me to come, therefore I came. He said, I don't want to go there, it's a horrible place. Then Krishna told me, just write those books and everything will be all right. You had a question, I think? Yes.
Yes, I have a question for you. Many of my family members believe in this Sai Baba in India, isn't it? And they're so deeply devoted to him that they'll offer them money and they'll actually go to see him in India, you see? And although in Krishna consciousness they actually oppose Sai Baba, and many others will also. But these people who actually believe in him as a master. But there are others who actually oppose in him greatly. What is going on?
What is going on? Illusion. He's not teaching Bhagavad Gita, and he presents himself or allows his followers to call him God. I've seen movies. He walks by and his followers are waiting and they're singing songs, you are Bhagavan, you are God. This is horrible.
even just a few purports ago, Srila Prabhupada was speaking about that. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, living entities conditioned in this material world claim to be God. They are thus illusioned. A living entity cannot be on the level of a Vishnu Tattva, or the personality of Godhead, at any stage. Therefore, it is ludicrous for a living entity to claim to be God. Advanced spiritualists would never accept such a thing. Such claims are made to cheat ordinary, foolish people. The Krishna Consciousness Movement declares war against such bogus incarnations. The bogus propaganda put out by people claiming to be God has killed God consciousness all over the world. Members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement must be very alert to defy these rascals who are presently misleading the whole world. One such rascal, known as Palindruka, appeared before Lord Krishna, and the Lord immediately killed him. Of course, those who are Krishna's servants cannot kill such imitation gods, but they should try their best to defeat them through the evidence of Shastra, authentic knowledge received through the disciplic succession. Have you seen that this Baba is unlimitedly full of opulence?
I have not seen this.
Have you seen a picture?
I've seen it.
Okay, have you seen the unlimited beauty? Have you seen that? Okay, then, that just by that, you know, this is not Bhagavan. Case closed. Prabhupada would get very angry. So he wouldn't mention his name, but everyone knew what he was talking about. And once in Mumbai, Prabhupada was lecturing, and he became transcendentally enraged, you know, speaking about this person who dared to claim he was God. So, "You call yourself Bhagavan? We want to see unlimited opulence, not big hairs." Kick on his face. When people ask me at preaching engagements, "What about that person?" The Prabhupada said a good way to deal with it is just don't recognize the person. "Have you heard of, you know, such and such? Which Baba? Who? Who? Huh? You don't know? No, I never heard of him. You haven't heard of such and such?" I said, "Everywhere in India there are Babas in every village. You've been to India, right? You know, people call, 'Hey, Baba.' It's like saying, 'Hey, you know, hey, mate.'" You know, just like, you know, down under, there are mates everywhere. Similarly, in India, there are Babas everywhere. It's just a general way of greeting anybody who looks remotely spiritual. Yeah. "Hey, Baba." So I told him, "There's so many Babas in every village. I'm sorry, I just haven't heard of this Baba in particular." And I said, "Well, what is his philosophy? Let us hear what his philosophy is. Then we can tell." And then I explain, "Well, if this Baba says he's God, or allows others to call him God, then this is an extraordinary disaster. Have you seen his name mentioned in the Shastra, in Bhagavatam, as an incarnation?" "No. All the avatars that are to be recognized by human beings are listed in Bhagavatam. He's definitely not the avatar for Kali Yuga. And if he's Bhagavan, have you seen unlimited opulence of the six types? Wealth, strength, knowledge, renunciation, beauty, fame. Have you seen all those? How can he be unlimitedly famous when I haven't heard of him? When Krishna was present, everyone had heard of Krishna, even though they might not have accepted him as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everybody knew about him, his fame. And then, of course, we won't talk about the so-called unlimited beauty of this. But
one thing is, it's preaching is actually growing. Many, many people are also believing in him.
That means the number of fools is always increasing. What was the American comedian W.C. Fields who said, there's a sucker born every minute?
I was in Kuala Lumpur not so long ago, and I was living in Hare Krishna Temple. Just around the corner, they're actually building a Sai Baba temple.
So, right around the corner here, they have, you know, massage parlors, you know, adult bookshops, you know. What can you do, you know? You have to know what is real. Can you, on the basis of Bhagavad Gita, explain this delusion? You should equip yourself so you can present the truth. That's the best way to deal with the situation. That's why Krishna, in the middle of Bhagavad Gita, showed his universal form. This particular character hasn't shown any universal form. So what if you can produce a little speck of gold dust in your hand or produce a wristwatch in your hand? Big deal. Let's see the universal form. That's the standard. Okay? Anything else?
You remember you talked about how it's about what their attitude should be towards their own leaving the body.
To their own what?
To leaving their own body. Where our attitude should be towards others leaving the body, like their family members, maybe I'm sort of suffering from Christian.
A devotee is compassionate, and a devotee shows compassion by always trying to engage people in Krishna's service. If you hear that your friends or relatives are leaving their body and you have the time, and it's the most effective way to use your time in Krishna's service, bring them some prasad, do something to engage them in Krishna's service. It is mentioned in the purport in Srimad Bhagavatam. I remember one devotee, his mother was dying, and she was not a devotee. He went to see her in the hospital, and she was afraid to die, and she just asked him, "Is your Krishna here with me now?" And then she died that moment. She died with Krishna on her last breath.
friends and relatives, some or other, try to engage them in Krishna's service out of their attachment for you. Be practical about it, about how much you can do. Being compassionate doesn't mean being sentimental. Anything else? Yes?
I was speaking to somebody the other day who's relatively familiar with Krishna consciousness. And he was reading the Prabhupada Lila Mita. He's got a little bit of that impersonal thing. And he was reading about the construction of the Vrindavan temple and how Prabhupada became like furious at the progress there. He was explaining the idea that anger comes from unfulfilled desire, or has the desire and it's not fulfilled. And that's the mundane, that is not his condition. And Prabhupada became angry, therefore, the devotees just transcendental, that is not.
Yes, this is a common Hinduism misconception. It has nothing to do with bhakti yoga. Why was Prabhupada angry? Because of whose unfulfilled desire, so to speak? Because of Krishna's unfulfilled desire. He was angry because they're wasting Krishna's time and Krishna's money. Not angry for himself. He knows everything belongs to Krishna. You're wasting Krishna's time, you're wasting Krishna's money. We are Krishna's employees. That is transcendental anger. But this conception is there, the sentimental conception is there in Hinduism that a sadhu is never angry. The sadhu is simply Om Shanti, Om Shanti. Once Prabhupada was speaking at a big outdoor engagement in Mumbai, thousands of people were there. Very respectable Indian people also. And right in the middle of Prabhupada's lecture, one hippie who happened to be attending, American or European hippie, stood up and started challenging Prabhupada. And Prabhupada roared back at him and defeated him. But many people in the audience left because they were thinking, a sadhu doesn't get angry. But why was Prabhupada angry? He was standing up for Krishna. This boy was attacking Krishna, this hippie boy. He couldn't take it that Prabhupada was speaking so strongly about Krishna and not the whatever, you know. And the So Prabhupada was very forceful in sitting him down, but many people in the audience had this sentimental conception of Hinduism, a sadhu never speaks forcefully, and so they left. It's like that. Even today in Japan, I've met persons who still remember how 30 years ago or so, Prabhupada came to Japan and he was doing a preaching program, invited by some local Indians, and they also invited some Mayavadi sannyasi to share the stage with Prabhupada. You know, it's Hinduism, hodgepodge. Hinduism, as I like to say, basically means anything that goes on in the subcontinent of India. That's Hinduism. So the Mayavadi sannyasi began to speak and just vibrating total nonsense. The Supreme has no form, no personality. I know, Prabhupada was getting very angry. Finally, Prabhupada couldn't take it any longer as he was sitting there. He turned to the devotees right while the man was speaking, said, "Start kirtan."
So all of a sudden, in the middle of the Mayavadi speech, the devotees are jumping up, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. And the people in the audience, they were just astonished, like, what kind of sadhu is this? They still remember that. One person, a few years ago, told me, we remember when your Swamiji came. Oh, so, Prabhupada is supposed to sit there peacefully while someone blasphemes Krishna, saying he's got no form, he's got no personality, he's got no faith. Love will not allow that. Suppose someone began to talk about a person who's most dear to you in that way. You couldn't take it. You couldn't just be sit there and Om Shanti. So Srila Prabhupada's reaction is out of pure love, the height of being a sadhu. But impersonals can't understand that, therefore this boy can't understand that. That in the spiritual world there is perfect lust, perfect anger, perfect fear, everything is perfect. All the emotions are there in perfection. He just wants to make it all zero. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.